I look at my love for Jesus and his example of what perfect love is, not only just in marriage, but just in loving those that I call family and friends in this world.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins.
And I'm your co-host, Jess Clark, the future Mrs. Higgins.
In this series, Jess and I will be sitting down with some of our favorite couples to unpack what hope looks like in each season of the relationship journey.
Guests share their personal stories and marital advice for Ben and myself and for you.
It's going to be a celebration for all, no matter what love looks like in this season. And this episode in particular is extra special for Jess and I.
In this episode, we're interviewing our parents, and we talk about basically the longevity of a relationship. They really, I really want to know how they've stayed in love, because we're lucky to have two sets of parents that are falling in love with each other every day, and they really spoke to us about that and showered us with a blessing that was unexpected and emotional, and this conversation just meant a lot to me personally, and I know to Ben too. So it's going to be a blast. Let's jump into it on this special episode of Hope Still Wins. Here's Ben and I's parents.
Of course, it's our special guest that we've promised you for a while. All of them are here with us, and this is going to be great. Jessica's parents are here, my parents are here, and we're going to talk relationships. Are you ready?
Yeah.
We told them not to talk over each other, so there may be a delay in every question.
I blew it already.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. Well, you know, we wanted to do this episode. This is very special to us as we prep for our wedding and as we do the relationship series on Hope Still Wins, because all of you have had a huge impact in our lives, and we have great parents. And so we know your advice is going to be really helpful for many. We're going to start with the Clarks here. The first question I have for you all, if you don't mind giving a little of your history of how you met. Remember, we have like 30 minutes here. And so like the abbreviated version of how you met. And then also, I'd love to know how you knew that your partner was the right partner for you.
We met on the front porch of my fraternity house at Georgia Tech. And we did not date for several years after that first meeting. But when we began to date, how did I know that Jill was the right one for me? We had been dating for 2 or 3 months, and Jill and I had a date, and the date got interrupted because I had what turned out to be appendicitis. And instead of going to a romantic dinner, Jill took me to the emergency room to have my appendix removed. And the next day, I woke up in the hospital, in my recovery room, I woke up. And, you know, at this point, it's a good 12 hours after my surgery. And Jill is sitting at the foot of my bed wearing the same thing that she had on when she took me to the ER. So obviously she had not been home. And sat at the foot of my bed all night. And I just looked at her, and I didn't say anything, but I just said to myself, I'm going to marry her. That's how I knew.
So when I was taking Jay to the hospital, I knew something very serious was going on. And at that moment, I think I realized I can't live without this guy. Like, I'm sure he's going to be fine, but the thought of losing him made me realize I can't live without him. So it was in that moment, I think we both knew.
Jessica is going to shed a tear during this. I have a big feeling that at some point it's going to be
already a vulnerable time for me. Okay, Dave and Amy, how did you guys meet, and when did y'all know that the other one was the one? We'll start with Amy.
Well, David and I were at Purdue University together. We had been in school together, in the same school at Purdue for almost 2.5 years. Had not dated at all, but had several classes together. And on the very last night of my very last final at my time at Purdue, David asked me if I would like to go out with a group from that class. And I said, no, I had to get home, get ready to leave to go home. And he said, oh, I promise I'll get you back early. So we went to Harry's Chocolate Shop at Purdue University and sat at the bar with many of our other classmates at the time and just started to visit. And I had known David as a classmate and kind of friend all through the 2.5 years. But that night he looked at me and he said, now, where is it that you live? And I told him and he said, well, that's only like an hour from my hometown, Warsaw. He goes, would you mind if I called on you this summer? He did say those words. Can I call on you this summer? And I was like, okay, what do you want to call me? No, I didn't say that. And so that was in May. We were engaged in August and married in February. And I think how I knew that he was the one was because for 2 years I got to watch him just as a person, like socially interacting with other people, being a classmate with no romantic involvement. And then when we started to date, frankly, just to be honest, I knew I wanted to marry him or thought that he was marrying material prior to what I would consider falling totally romantically in love with him. I thought there's good bones here. And I see great potential in this man. And okay, I know you always laugh when I say that word.
He's a project. He's a good project.
He was a project, no. And it worked out, you know, it was great. You know, I think we, even up until the day I married him, I was still falling what I would consider like romantically in love with him. And I still feel like even that today, that it wasn't, I did not marry him because I was so attracted physically and just romantically with him. I just knew there was a good man there and I wanted him forever.
All right, Dad, it's your turn. How did you know that Mom was the one? I asked you this on a rooftop. This has become a famous story in the household. I don't even know if you know this. I think you might, Jess. But my dad came out to re-roof my house with me when I first moved to Denver. And it was hot. It was probably 100 degrees. We were re-roofing this house. We were throwing roofing all around. We were sweating. We were exhausted. And my dad was acting funny. Like, the Clarks know this side of my dad because they saw it just a few months ago. But my dad was just different. He was quiet. He was distant. He was napping a lot. He wasn't like working as hard as he usually does. And he works hard. And it was weird. So anyways, we're up on the roof and I was like, this is a good time to ask my dad this question. I said, Dad, how did you know that Mom was the one? Or how would I know if I've met the one for me? And he took some time and I was like, oh, this is good. My dad's going to give advice. And he doesn't give advice like all the time, unsolicited advice. And he looked at me and he goes, Ben, you know how you know they're the one? I said, how? He goes, you just know. And I was like, And it's funny because the more I now in my life, as I found Jess, I'm like, no, he was right. But at the time, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like you would think that there'd be a checklist. Well, 2 weeks later, he went in and had triple bypass surgery because he was tired from having clogged arteries. So that was a big moment for us. I'll never forget that story. Anyways, I took up too much time. Dad, how did you know Mom was the one?
Is it going to change?
Well, no, Mom was very correct. We went to Harry's Chocolate Shop the very last night of school, sat there, and I asked the question, you mind if I call on you this summer? And she goes, no. So I went home, and my family had a catering business. And I'd ask her to get together on that Saturday night the following week. She says, great. My dad says, well, that's the problem. I go, why is that? He says, well, you got a catering event with your grandfather, and you got to go out and work. And what we did was you fried fish. So I called her up, and I said, okay, sorry, but I've got two choices for you. One, we can postpone our date, or you can go on a fish fry with me. She went. So, and she worked very hard. And at the end of the night, my grandfather, who was probably 80 at that time, he came up and he looks at me and he goes, "She's a keeper." Well, I have a lot of respect for my grandfather. So that was kind of like, you know, step number one, right? But no. And then your mom was very correct in the timeline. We just fell in love with each other. And it fast forwarded very, very quickly. 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, it's gotten even better.
What do you think the secret is to, in 10 and 20 years, you're falling more in love with that person and not just them being like a roommate or just someone that's there to hang out with? What is that like continual falling in love? Because I hear it from you, Dave and Amy, and then I see it from my parents. I feel like every day, you know, they're falling more in love with each other. So I would love to know the answer to that question.
Let's start with the Clarks, since we just went through the Higgins. Let's start back with the Clarks on their advice, and we'll transfer back around. I like this loop.
You know, for me, I would say it's communication, communication, communication. It is spending quality time together and really talking, not superficial, but, you know, really getting to know each other and hopes and dreams and challenges and fears. And, you know, it's a type of communication that comes in good times and bad times. So not only when things are going well and you're having fun and you're on top of the world, but when I've done something that hurts Jill or hurts her feelings or I was not kind to her, and her telling me that rather than sleeping on it or hiding it or just, you know, trying to kick the can down the road. So I think the key is communication.
And I think it's always putting your relationship above everything else, even when you have kids. It's always, We're a team, we're together, and we're walking forward together. Communication and putting that relationship absolutely first. And making time for dates. Always having time.
You both, I'll say as we transition over here, one thing Jessica and I have noticed in both of our parents is the ability to go on dates. And really throughout my childhood, some of my favorite memories are knowing that my parents are still in love by the fact that they go together with friends, or they just get out of the house, just the two of them. And then, you know, the Clarks, do the same thing. And I think that's just, an important note, one that seems simple and easy. And probably if you're in the rhythm of it, you're like, yeah, of course you do. But I don't think it's as common as you think. I think it is rare, but I think it's helpful. All right. Just for everybody listening, my parents are in two separate locations. My dad is helping.
This is how we stay in love. We don't live together.
No, they're separate right now. And so it's a little bit different. They kind of will probably step on top of each other. So we'll just start here with my dad, because he usually likes to follow my mom in what she says. He's good at that. And so, Dad, I'd like to know your secret to falling in love year over year over year, decade after decade after decade.
First of all, it starts with friendship. I mean, you know, bottom line is Amy's my forever friend, my best friend. And I think that's where it starts, first of all. I think, you know, like she said, we knew each other for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, it was like, hey, this girl's pretty sharp. And before you know it, you know, we start the dating thing. And it just, as the years go by, it just keeps getting better and better and better. One of the things you two are going to experience here in another, 6 weeks, is going to be these words, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. Mm-hmm. And that's so true, because, you know, your mom and I have been through all that. And it's it really does make you fall deeper and deeper and deeper in love with that person.
Mother?
I have to agree with your dad in the fact that being a friend, a best friend with your spouse is, you know, a great gift. But I also want to warn you in that I remember specifically, this was, you were, you know, elementary school, we had a great social network. We were going out a lot. We were having a lot of fun. And I remember we were just kind of in a, you know, those are busy and kind of, I don't want to say stressful years, but they take a lot out of you. And I remember one night we were getting ready to go out, and I was feeling a little, I don't know, want to say we were having a rough patch. I was just feeling a little stagnant maybe in just our time being together. And I remember we left the house and got just down the street, and I told David to stop the car, and I looked at him and I said, listen, you are my best friend, but we've got to remember that we're lovers, and I don't feel romantic with you anymore. Because, I mean, we were having a ton of fun, and we were having a ton of fun with our friends, and we were always doing great, fun things. But I had gotten to a point where I just felt like, yeah, I hang out with my best friend all the time. And I think sometimes it's good to stop and go, no, let's remember, in the midst of being really good friends to each other, remind yourself that there's a romance behind that. You don't want to lose that ability to be really intimate lovers with one another and do things that facilitate that. And sometimes you need to take the time just to be the two of you on a date and enjoy your time together. So I think we've been really good about that over the years, about reminding each other that we sometimes you have to do a little work at getting that little spark going again. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, because you spend a lot of time with that person. So
when you have these big conversations, ones that feel daunting, or they're aching at your gut, and you don't know how to even approach it, or you don't know how it's going to be taken in, what's your strategy for these? If it's finances, you know, we have a podcast coming out on finances and relationships. If it's time spent, if it's romance, whatever it is, how do you confront as a couple those really hard conversations?
You want to go first, David?
Your mom tends to, when she'll tend to clam up, and those are the frustrating times for me. And Jessica just raised her hand. Jill did
too. Me too.
I mean, all the clams in the room, raise your hand.
And I'm one that's like, let's throw it out on the table. Let's talk about this, you know? I'm probably quicker at trying to figure out what is the solution to the problem. Or sometimes, you know, and I've learned to do this over the years, is, you know, sometimes you just got to give her space, and then you go on ahead and start having the conversation. And I've learned, instead of, you know, jumping in, I've learned to say, do you want to talk about this now? And, you know, and we do.
How many years did it take you to learn that, Dad? Like, how long did it take you to notice it and then act on that?
I'd say that the first couple of years, I'd call kind of like the puppy love years. But then, you know, a little bit later on, that's when you really start realizing it. And I'm not perceptive sometimes. So I was terrible at that. But, you know, then all of a sudden when your mom just goes, I just don't want to talk to you right now. I mean, you know, that's a pretty big statement. So I just learned to give her time, give her space. So it took a few years to get to that point.
Mom, would you agree with all that? Do you have anything to add?
I do agree with all that. And I just have to say that what I appreciate about your dad is that he did pretty quickly realize that just because I wasn't saying anything or I didn't want to talk about it didn't mean that I was necessarily upset or mad about it. I just tend to, if you don't give me a few minutes to kind of think my thoughts through, something might come spilling out of my mouth that isn't well thought. And so I think that's been good. And I think it's been good that we've communicated that to each other and we've respectively honor that. And so it gives us a good platform then to have discussion.
I think we've actually talked about that before, because I tend to lead with emotion if we talk about it right away. And I'm the same, Amy. I need that time to process and make sure that I'm being logical and not overly emotional, which just happens sometimes. But it is. I mean, it's all about that communication, just learning one another. Mom and Dad, what about you guys?
It's pretty much the same in that, and exactly what Amy said, it's, I clam up if I'm angry or hurt, not because I don't want to talk about it, but because I need time to think through what's the real issue, what do I want to say without all the emotion. Jessica, you got that for me.
Thank you.
Of course, Jay immediately notices something's wrong because I'm quiet, and he's like, what's wrong? And I'll go, nothing, no, something's wrong. So Jay pushes, and then we're like, okay, just give me a few minutes, and usually we just sit down and talk about it. But I need a few minutes, for sure. Try not to take a day. We try not to sleep on it, but I definitely need a few minutes.
Yeah, I think the key is striking a balance and not letting it fester too long, but also, you know, give your spouse time to process and, coalesce thoughts and sort of, you know, get their wits about them. But just don't let those tough times fester too long, especially don't sleep on them, and really try to attack them when they do happen.
Mm-hmm. Ben and I are laughing because we have these same communication issues and we're still learning them with one another. But off of that, have you guys ever gone to sleep when you've been angry at one another? And what were the repercussions? Or do you feel like you've been good about following that rule that I feel like is told to every single couple? Let's start with Jay Clark.
Oh, I would say in, 32 years of life together, I'm sure we have gone to bed angry at one another. It hasn't happened often. And the repercussions of it is typically a poor night's sleep, mm-hmm. and regret the next morning that we didn't stay up and talk about it and work through it. And just the desire, the wishes, the second thought or the second guessing that, the remorse that we should have handled it the night before instead of waiting until the next day.
It's been told to us. It's the reason we ask is because it's one of the key pieces of advice that we're given is don't go to bed upset. And then at the same time, we've also gotten the advice of from some of Jessica's closest friends who are married and happily married for over 15 years is don't put that pressure on yourselves. If you need a night to sleep on it, go ahead and sleep on it. That's okay. And so it's just something it's interesting to us to explore is how do couples who have lasted 30 plus years, 40 plus years, enter into conflict and enter out of conflict, and is sleeping on it or is letting the next day go by a healthy thing. So, mom or dad, whoever wants to answer that.
Well, I really feel like I have gone to bed angry multiple times, and truth be told, I think I go to bed angry more with myself than I do with David. I'm angry at myself for the way I've reacted. I'm angry at myself because I can't communicate why I feel the way I feel. I really felt like, I feel like over the years, David hits the bed and the world gets in it and he doesn't even remember it the next day. I think sometimes it's been a great protection for me to go to bed angry because like you said, Ben, if we would have started a conversation on trying to figure it out, talk it through, fix it in the moment, I know just personally, I don't deal well in that situation sometimes. And so sometimes I wake up in the morning and I go, God, what was I so mad about? And so I don't know. What about you, David?
I can't think of hardly too many nights I've gone to bed mad.
Like, I take my
That's the favorite part of his day.
He started yawning today around 2:30, and he was like, "Man,
it's time for bed."
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways. And like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. People did write in a lot of questions, and one that's been coming up a lot, and Jessica and I are lucky enough, but also I would just say it's been a good, not, I don't even know if lucky is the right word here. I think it's been a good witness for us to see our families with faith at the center of their relationships. That's been something that's always been present, and not just as a really cool thing to do or something that keeps everybody in line, but as a breathing force through your lives, through the way that you operate your households, through the way that you operate your lives. And so I think I'm going to ask a really broad question, because we ended with the Higgins. We're going to start back with the Clarks.
I mean, the Bible has so much to say about a husband and a wife and their relationship to each other and what a marriage is and is not. And I just can't imagine trying to have a marriage apart from biblical instruction. I mean, it teaches me to put my wife first, to protect her and nurture her. I am the head of the household and responsible for her. And it's a source of truth for us, and it is a guide. And I can't imagine our marriage without biblical instruction at the center of it.
Mom, anything to add?
Just, I'm thinking about like even conflict resolution and communication and all of those foundational things we just talked about, without the core belief that I get up every morning and I go to bed every night because God has breathed life into me and I can share that life with the man that I love, and seeing our whole marriage through that lens, I can't imagine doing it without Christ.
Amy, what about you?
For me, my faith is the foundation of my marriage. And I'm hoping just the way I just walk through this world, but I look at my love for Jesus and his example of what perfect love is, not only just in marriage, but just in loving those that I call family and friends in this world. I just long, it's almost like a longing for me every day to just learn to do that better. And, I think when you're just in pursuit of just loving well, and through the eyes of how Jesus loved me, I just don't think you can dispute how incredibly healthy that has to be for a marriage, not let alone just how I move and groove in this world. So,
Dave, anything to add?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of times I make the statement, God does some really crazy, stupid things in his own time. Sometimes we don't understand it at that point in time, but later we do. We talked about Amy and I, how we've originally met, and we originally moved to Florida. First several years of our life, there was very little faith background that we practiced, okay? And then we started to see the light again, and then that also comes in with community, with the church and your small groups and, your friends and that type of thing. And it just continues to grow. One of the things I love about you two Ben and Jess, is the Clarks and us, we get to see you guys. And we get to see that that's a foundation that we see each and every day with you two. And that just makes my heart so full. It is just absolutely incredible. And we feel blessed. I feel completely blessed. And, you know, you guys have talked about what you've seen in us. I'm going to reverse it. It's what we see in you. And you guys are starting it off right.
Well, that's a great thanks, Pop. Thank you all. Two last questions for you. We'll start with my mom. We have a bunch of people from a bunch of different backgrounds that listen to this podcast, different faith traditions, different mindsets, and the hope is that we can open up a discourse that where people can have conversations that matter, and obviously understand where Jess and I come from in our lives. So, for anybody listening, and if you could speak it towards Jess and I, because I don't think many parents get this opportunity. What advice do you give us? If you can only take about, you know, a minute to answer these questions, that'd be great. But what advice do you give us as we enter into marriage?
Ugh, golly. Okay. I think the best advice that I can give you is you're living in a time where it's so cool to see where you each individually can be kind of your own person. You can explore your individuality, whether, you know, it's through education and career and just spending time growing into yourself. I think that's awesome. But I think one of the best things I can tell you advice-wise is as you join as one in marriage, it's not just a physical thing. You need to put as much energy into finding your individuality and finding your togetherness as a couple and intertwining that and how that looks. And it's real easy to live two great people in a household together, but there's also this intertwining that needs to happen. And so take the time and the energy to weave your life together too. And don't neglect that, whatever that is, whether it's finding a new activity that either one of you have never done before, or I don't know, there's just lots of different ways to do that, but be very intentional about that, because the two of you do need to become one too, so that if for God knows whatever reason, one of you are no longer there, you will have that sense of missing something, like something has died in you. And so that sounds a little morbid, but it's very true. You need to know that you can't hardly live without the other when it's all done and said.
When you enter into marriage, it's just not about you, it's about the two of you together. And you know, one of the things that I love about your mother is we've been able to develop a relationship where it's Dave and Amy, or Amy and Dave, and it doesn't, you know, we just, I understand what your mom's saying about individuality, and I agree with her there, but boy, when you come together as two, and you live your life together, and, you know, you develop that relationship, and I see, and there's a foundation that you build that on, you build it upon the cornerstone of God, right? He's created you, he's developed you, and he's basically brought you your spouse. And, you know, it's funny, I sit back and I think about some of the stuff that we have been able to participate in as a couple. It just warmed my heart. I mean, we've been involved in some very cool things. We've been involved in some very difficult things, but yet at the same time, it's great.
Yeah, and I think too, to add to your thought, to close that, because I can speak for you, Dad. I guess that's the takeaway to have. But What I've seen in Mom and you is, yes, you've done some really cool things and you've done some really difficult things, but you've always done it together. Like, there's never been this, I'm on an island, I feel alone in my most difficult moments, or I'm on an island and I feel lonely in my greatest moments. You've done it as a team. And I think that's something that I've picked up on. And I think it's what both of you are saying as well. And I think that is incredible, because I don't think either of you have ever woken up in the morning and doubted that your partner was going to leave you isolated and alone, over something monumental in your life. And I think that's a huge gift. So I appreciate that. All right. On to Jill Clark.
Now, one piece of advice. I think it's important as you enter into marriage and as you enter into a relationship together, you always look through the lens of knowing your partner wants the absolute best for you and loves you deeply with all their heart. You're always looking through the lens of the best in them, so that when things happen that make you angry, or when something happens and something gets missed, instead of immediately thinking they're trying to hurt me, you go to, they're not trying to hurt me. And it makes conversations easier. It makes everything easier when you're looking at that person through the lens of, there's no one in this world who loves me the way Jay Clark loves me. And so whatever he just did, we can talk it out. I think seeing the best in your partner always and starting there helps so much in all avenues. Your turn.
Dave, you guys have been married how long?
38 years.
38.
Good answer.
So you got 70 years of collective experience here, Ben and Jessica. Mm-hmm.
This is a gift.
Yeah, we're lucky.
I'm sorry. Let's see. Yes, 70. So Ben, a little earlier, your dad said, pretty soon you're going to say the words, for better, for worse, for richer, for poor. One of the other words you're going to say is, till death do us part. And I think, one of my pieces of advice is never, ever use the D word to each other, or anything like the D word, the D word being divorce. Never, ever say anything like, maybe you should have married your old boyfriend, or maybe I should just leave, or maybe this isn't going to work. Just don't ever even let your thought life or the conversation go in that direction.
Yeah.
This is forever. And it's going to be hard. It's not always easy. I mean, there are some incredibly fun, unbelievable days ahead of you. There's some tough times, and you just have to go into this with the mindset that, this is it. This is the one and only forever. And my big piece of advice would be, just don't even let that thought ever come into the conversation.
Are you scared?
I'm not scared.
I'm scared.
This is it.
I think earlier today, Jessica, we were talking, we were doing the intro to this, and she said, and I think the intro says something like, we're at the week of our wedding, because one of these was going to air at the week of our wedding. And she goes, I've been waiting for this my whole life. And I have too. I'm very excited. Well, the cool part here as we close is this, and there's one other thing that our families have in common is, I know that the Clarks have prayed for Jessica's spouse, because Jay Clark told me this when I asked for his blessing since the day she was born. And I know my parents have prayed for my spouse since the day I was born. It's a good thing. It worked. Final question. Jessica, you've been really good at this. And so I think you ask it, and if you can answer it as a couple, in the last, you know, 4 minutes that we have here.
Okay, so the last question is, does Hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Who are we starting with?
We will start with the Higginses. Is it? I need to get this right. Is it Higginses or Higgins?
Higgins.
Apostrophe.
Higgins.
Higgins apostrophe? Higgins.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay, you're now official, yes.
For a lot of different reasons, I could never, ever deny the fact that Hope doesn't win when it comes to your dad and I's relationship. There's been so many times that I've just been so hopeful that we would make through illness, that I would have a baby, that I would fall in love with my husband even deeper, that we would be able to have a long and amazing life together. And there was times when it would have been really easy for me personally, and I think, David, you probably were feeling a lot of the same thing on the other side of this, that I just wasn't sure where that hope was going to come from. I thought our days were going to be short and sad. And I just prayed with such a hopeful and earnest heart that there would be such blessing in our life. And it has overflowed. I mean, overflowed. And so I think when you just go about the not only the tough times, but the real rich and wonderful times with just this heart of continuing hope that you're just going to make it through this earthly life in one piece. I can't imagine not having that, or I would have been so sad and given up and been so discouraged years ago.
Thank you, Mom. Thanks for sharing. Dad, anything to add? Or
go out and seek people who know or can help you find that hope, because hope definitely wins. And you know, your mom mentioned stuff about health things, that type of thing. I mean, we've been blessed with a Lord and Savior, and Jesus helped provide that for us. He lived that. And hope definitely wins. I mean, this life is awesome. That next life is glorious. And we all know that's where we're going.
Jill, or the Clarks, I guess, as a couple.
I'm chuckling because my devotional this morning was the story of two guys that their favorite football team was playing, but they both had meetings and they couldn't watch it, so they agreed to record it. And they were sitting there watching it together, and their team was getting killed. But one guy noticed that the other guy wasn't as upset as he was. And his friend finally admitted that during the meeting, somebody let it slip that it was one of the greatest comebacks in football history. And he knew that his team won, even though he was sitting there watching his team lose. And as Dave and Amy have both said, you know, that's what we get as believers, as followers of God. The devotional said, our hope is not anchored in this present world, but our hope is anchored in the world to come. C.S. Lewis said, there every day will be better than the day before. And J.R.R. Tolkien said, everything sad will become untrue. Sorrow will be no more, and all things will be redeemed. So yes, hope wins. It's guaranteed. We know how the story ends. Just like one of the friends that was watching the game, and he already knew the final score. That's the privilege and the promise that we have.
Yeah, I think the only thing I add in any of it is God created the world with hope in mind, in that there is a sunrise and a sunset. And if the sun sets on a bad day, guess what? You get to get up the next morning and do it again. It's not, God created the world with hope, in hope, with hope in mind. Every single morning is a new opportunity to hope. And I think hope wins all the time.
Well, I think I will speak for Ben and I that we are two of the luckiest people about to get married, because we get to get this advice whenever we want it. And I feel sorry for listeners that you only get 45 minutes. But we love you guys. We're really, really thankful that we have you as parents, and that you've invested so much into us. And this just meant a lot to us.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming on Hope Still Wins in Relationships with our parents. It means a ton. We love you all. Thank you.
Love you.
Love you.
That was special. That was special for me, and I know for you, hon. We're lucky. And we're lucky that they even agree to come on and do this together. That could have been dangerous.
I know. Luckily, they're friends, too, so it worked out.
They're very similar, and they love us dearly. And they love a lot of the people that support us a lot. I mean, I know they do. I know they care deeply about the people that support us. So, hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate you tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins and Relationships.
And thank you for welcoming Ben and I's family to the show. It's extra special for us. We hope you enjoyed tuning in.
We'll be back next week for the final episode of Hope Still Wins and Relationships. We hope, get it, you'll join us. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and we'll talk soon.
You little goofball.